This is a Suno India production, and you're listening to the Suno India Show.
The Supreme Court passed an order that could have far-reaching impact on the lives of sex workers.
After years of being ostracized, humiliated, discriminated and exploited, sex workers will finally get legal protection.
The Supreme Court said that sex workers deserve equal protection under the law. The bench said, and I quote, "Basic protection of human decency and dignity extends to sex workers and their children who, bearing the brunt of social stigma attached to their work, are removed to the fringes of the society, deprived of their right to live with dignity and opportunities to provide the same to their children." End quote. The origins of this case dates back to 1999 and started tragically with the death of a sex worker from Kolkata called Chhaya Rani Pal, also known as Buri. A client of hers, Buddhodev Kormoshkar, brutally murdered her. He was convicted and his appeal went up to the Supreme Court, where the bench decided to make it a suo motu petition on the welfare and rights of sex workers. Most of the directions given by the Supreme Court are towards the police machinery. The court asked the corps to leave sex workers who are working in the profession by choice alone and not to arrest those working voluntarily. It also directed them to treat sex workers who are victims of sexual assault with the same facilities available to all sexual assault victims. Hi, I am Surya Tapa Mukherjee, hosting this episode of the Suno India Show. To understand more about the impact of the order, I spoke to Meena Saraswati Seshu, founder of Sangram, a Sangli-based organization that works for the rights of sex workers. She also runs a collective of more than 5,000 sex workers in Maharashtra and North Karnataka called VAMP or Vaishya Annyay Mukti Parishad. So can you tell me the importance of the Supreme Court order in the struggle to fight for rights of sex workers?
Yeah, this has been a long struggle. Sangram has been working in this field now from 1992. We started because of the HIV/AIDS epidemic, right? So along the way, there was this case called the Buddhadev Karmaskar versus State of West Bengal, where this person had actually murdered a sex worker in Bengal and had argued that after all, it's a sex worker. And this case went up to the Supreme Court. And after this case of this murder went up to the Supreme Court, the murder actually happened in 1999. It came as a criminal appeal before two bench judge. And it was Justices Markandeya Katju and Gyan Sudha Mishra. And they decided that, we should make this into a suo motu public interest litigation. And that's what happened. They constituted a panel with three TOR for that panel. And this panel actually spoke to a lot of stakeholders. We were part of that, those submissions to the panel, the Supreme Court panel. And what we hear today, what we know today is the final recommendation. So there were a lot of interim recommendations. And then the final recommendation was submitted actually in 2016. It has just now come up for hearing. It's called the third interim report, which was given. And the issue is that the Supreme Court accepted the recommendations, but the orders were not given because the union government and the state governments were unwilling to I mean, they were arguing in court that many of the recommendations that were culled from all our submissions were not acceptable to government. And now what we have, of course, is that some of the recommendations have been accepted. And the ones that have been accepted is what we are at this point of time rejoicing. The rest of the recommendations will be discussed in July at the next hearing. So in this hearing, there are two, in this particular order, there are two recommendations that are very close to our heart as sex worker rights activists. One is the issue of police violations. We have strange ways that the police has been dealing with sex workers for years now. Because don't forget that sex work is not legal, but the sex workers can practice their business at an individual level. There are restrictions as to where they can practice this business. So soliciting, running or you know, living off the earnings of a woman in sex work, all of this under the Immoral Traffic Prevention Act are criminal offenses. But if this woman individually is actually not an illegal entity, the court has ordered that police cannot continue to violate sex workers' dignity. Because the problem is that this is not something that is earth-shattering. This is there in the Constitution of India, but the police have constantly neglected to understand the issue of sex workers because of stigma, because of discrimination, because of morality issues, also because of the conflation of trafficking with sex work. So women who are in sex work of their own volition are subjected to raids and rescues and, you know, put into protective homes. So there is a lot of conflation of moral issues with the law. And like I keep saying, the police does moral policing, not legal policing. And this has been going on for years. In fact, we used to call the police right in the beginning, in the 1990s, that they are the hair-pulling police officers, because we would find that they would come to raid the women and invariably, for some reason, would try and, you know, women have long hair, to pull them with their hair into the police vans. And I have seen this with my own eyes. This has reduced a lot over the years, but this was how the police used to be towards sex workers, and even foul language. You know, so the police belonging, having a very patriarchal mindset as an institution, they have constantly belittled, stigmatized, discriminated women in sex work. So our initial fights or our initial struggles were always to look at these violations and try and do submissions to the National Human Rights Commission, for instance, or to state governments, because police is a state subject in India. So to the various state governments where we've been working. And that has been the culmination of all those submissions, discussions with sex workers across the country, which the panel instituted. They got this recommendation that the police should be told that they have to uphold the dignity of women and sex workers and women in sex work. And the panel was very interesting, because what it did was it gave the Supreme Court was very interesting. It gave the panel a TOR of three important issues. One is prevention of human trafficking. The second is rehabilitation of sex workers who wish to leave sex work. and conditions conducive for sex workers to live with dignity who wish to continue their work. So this is the third TOR, which is being at present discussed, and the recommendations for which are presently what the Supreme Court has ordered on.
Okay, so for you, the main focus or like the main thing of interest is basically how the police treat sex workers and about treating sex workers with dignity. So how do you think this will change things on the ground?
See, the other one, the other recommendation that we are very thankful for, actually, is that, and which means that the union government and the state governments have accepted, because this is not being contested, is the fact that there are a lot of women who are adult women lying in these protection homes run by maybe anti-trafficking, non-governmental, non-profit organizations, or the state itself. And they are languishing there because that is the law that any adult woman, if the magistrate believes she's in sex work, can be put into a protection home up to 5 years. And we have been fighting this, saying that adult women who are providing sexual services on their own volition should not be considered women who need protection or women who are victims to be put into protective homes. But this has not been accepted by many states, and it has been hugely problematic. For instance, in on the ground in Kolhapur, where I work, in one of the districts where I work, there were, you know, really older women, 40, 45-year-old women, 9 of them who were picked up in a raid and sent to protective home. We have even done a research on women who are sent to protective homes. It's called Raided, and it's on our website, which is www.nnswindia.org, which is the National Network of Sex Workers website. Because Raided actually showed us very clearly, the research showed us, which was done with Pune University professors, that a lot of these women who go to these rehabilitation homes or protective homes are not able to sustain whatever income generation government is teaching them in the home. And when they come back, after going through almost like a year and a half of training, they come back and have to continue to work in sex work, because sex work actually means enhancement of their income, which they're unable to, make in the wherever they are working. Like maybe it is, tailoring or making pickles or whatever that was taught to them in the rehabilitation home. It's also true that when these women get into these rehabilitation homes, the Raided research showed us that many of them have to, they make, the families outside are living off debts that, they take from local moneylenders to survive, because their mother or the earning member has been put into a rehabilitation home. So the women, when they came out, they found that they had to deal with double debts, the debts that they were already having before going into the rehabilitation home. And while they were in the rehabilitation home, the children or the old parents had, used the moneylenders just to survive. And the no amount of, tailoring or making pickles was able to help them get out of debt. They came back to sex work. So, this is what is happening on the ground. They're adult women. They're in sex work through consent. They are providing sexual services, and they are picked up in these raids and sent to protective homes, where the protective homes, the system wasn't such that they could ask them if they wanted to be in the protective home or not. And so it was basically incarceration more than, you know, protection. The court now has ruled that a survey of all the protective homes should be undertaken. And women who are there and who want freedom, who do not want this protection, should be allowed to state that because they're adults and they should be set free. So that is the thing that is going to change on the ground. Because the raids, the manner in which the raid is conducted by the police, the manner in which they're picked up and made to become victims for protection, all of that will change with this, this order. And therefore, I think the sex worker rights movement at present is very excited and joyous that at least, this is being ordered, and hopefully the state governments will take it seriously, will give the police and the the women and child department under which the protective homes come, orders or guidelines to execute the orders of the Supreme Court.
Right. And the top court also spoke about that the police should take complaints of sexual assault by sex workers more seriously. Could you tell us a bit more about that?
See, the understanding, like I told you, the police is a very, very patriarchal institution. So invariably, if there is sexual assault, the police will say, well, you were on the street soliciting, how can you be assaulted? You were on the street for sex work, how can you be assaulted? And how can you be raped? So this understanding that even if you're in sex work, consent at any given point of time is important is what the Supreme Court has ruled. And I think this is a great win for all women's rights in the country. It is not just for sex workers. Because, this understanding of what consent actually means is something that will get unraveled because of this order.
Right, yes. And how much would this be an issue, like in terms of, these clashes with the police, or not exactly clashes, like these problems with the police, how much of this is an issue in terms of scale? And does it vary from region to region, or is it just very common everywhere?
Okay, see, the way this works out is that, first of all, the panel met everyone from all the states of the country, right? So they obviously got these kinds of reports from everywhere. I can talk about the reports that we submitted, which is from Maharashtra. We did a status of sex workers report for all over India for CEDAW, where most of the case studies that were sent to us were police violations. So this is common. The fact that the police in all the states are extremely, extremely patriarchal in their way of thinking about women, and that affects their policing methodologies, is well known. Wherever there are organized, where women have been organized, because the model we have is this model that collectivizes sex workers to fight back against injustice within and outside of sex work. Because there are a lot of exploitative practices within sex work also, which is the reason why one would organize in the first place. So this kind of organizing has reduced police violence. I am not saying that it has not. The HIV/AIDS epidemic also helped sensitize the police to treat sex workers as citizens of this country. So I think in the last 30 years, one has definitely seen some kind of change where there is a collective representation to the police. But wherever there is no collective representation to the police, which happens in many, many states where sex workers are not organized, there the sex workers, I think, are facing an uphill task trying to convince police to just treat them as citizens.
And there was also a very interesting directive in terms of issuing Aadhaar card to sex workers. Do you want to discuss that?
Yeah, see, the Aadhaar card thing actually is that, like we said, since we come from a very, very organized collective called Veshya Anyay Mukti Parishad, and wherever the national network of sex workers works, we've been able to get Aadhaar cards. It is in places where sex workers are not organized that Aadhaar cards are not available. Because what we did was that we gave the authorities letters per sex worker saying we know them, they live here, and they should be given Aadhaar cards or voting cards, voter IDs, or ration cards are very tough, but we've tried to give to organize for ration cards also. The problem is that women with sex workers is they don't have identification documents because of the nature of their work. They are either have run away from home from a difficult situation and so have run away without bringing any documentation with them, or they're they ran away with some man who they were in love with, and then it went sour and he disappeared. So they again don't have any identification papers. Very often what happens with sex workers is they form new families. They abandon their old families again because of not wanting to live with them for whatever reason. Either it's violence or it is just the fact that they're unhappy or there is no income there, and so they have to had to move. So mostly these are the reasons why they don't have identification documents of any kind. And so Aadhaar cards became an issue. But the Supreme Court had ordered that without identification documents, they should be given Aadhaar cards. And what they've done is that they have asked the District Legal Aids Authority, to help women who don't have Aadhaar cards to authenticate their applications such that the women can get Aadhaar cards, which is actually a very, very good directive in situations where Aadhaar cards have, women don't have access to any documentation.
Right. The Supreme Court has also issued directives for the press. So can you tell us, like, what are the problems that sex workers face with media persons?
the guidelines for that hasn't come yet. We have to wait for the Press Council of India to do that. And it'll be interesting if they will make these guidelines, asking the networks of sex workers actually in consultation with them, which actually would be the right way to do it. But I don't know if that will be done. The problem with the press is that they love those photographs of the police raiding the community and, sort of parading the women. Because the police then looks at it like, we are parading these people, we have raided them, we have caught them red-handed, in various hotels, lodges, whatever. And here they are. So this is also the work of the police. The police actually parades the women, or when they're conducting a raid, take the press along with them. This is a very common practice. And this directive of the Supreme Court will at least, help us to some extent deal with this kind of blatant invasion into the privacy of these women. Also, many times what happens with sex workers is that, their families may not know they're in sex work, and their photos being splashed on in the local media is so sad for them, or their children, for instance, who don't know that they are in sex work. They are and they're dependent on their mothers, and so the press sensationalizes and glamorizes these raids, and feel that they're doing this great service to the nation or to the state or whatever when they are doing this kind of invasive journalism. I think that this is a good move by the Supreme Court. Let us see what the guidelines will say. And I really hope that the media will learn to treat women and sex work with dignity.
Right. And can you tell us about what are some of the other times that the Supreme Court or the government has looked at the rights of sex workers and looked at the status of ITPA?
See, I think more than status of ITPA is during COVID, what happened was Maharashtra government actually gave an directive. And it's a very interesting piece of paper because for the first time we saw a change in language, which said that in Marathi, they've used Veshya Vyavasai, which means Veshya is the Sanskrit word for prostitute and Vyavasai is work or occupation, to direct the Women and Child Department to provide rations to sex workers. And this was very, very interesting because normally the language that is used is in Marathi, Deha Vikri, which essentially is trafficking, is the word for trafficking. So they made that, they unraveled trafficking and sex work in Maharashtra and said that dry rations should be given to women in sex work. After that, in the same case, there was a plea to the Supreme Court about, COVID relief, which then the Supreme Court ordered that 5,000 rupees per month should be given to the women and 2,500 rupees additional if they have children per month. And it is only the state of Maharashtra again, which actually did that, which actually looked for these lists. The Supreme Court had said that it will have to be given to women who are under the National AIDS Control Organization targeted intervention programs. And that is exactly what Maharashtra government did. Unfortunately, none of the other states in the country took the Supreme Court order seriously or even bothered to provide COVID relief. So that is a very positive thing that happened. The groundwork for that was already laid in Maharashtra, so I suppose it was easy for the government of Maharashtra to allocate resources and distribute it in all the districts of Maharashtra.
Right, okay. So you mentioned that there were some recommendations of the panel back in 2016 that the union government did not agree with. So what are the things that the government did not agree with that you said will be taken up in July?
Actually, that is the most important ones, right? Because we were arguing that the sex workers, since most of the activities around sex work are criminalized, we find that it's very difficult for sex workers to access justice. So we were actually trying to, or rather that was the recommendation we had made, that we must fight for the decriminalization of all sex work. And I don't think the union government is ready for that. We had also proposed that if a child is found in the brothel, it should not be assumed that they are trafficked. But this also, is something that the union government has not sort of accepted yet. Because the union government, I think, is worried about, the right of, we have this act, right? The right of children to free and compulsory education. Act, and we have Article 21A. I think the union government has to really understand that children who are found in the brothels need not necessarily mean that the mothers are trying to, you know, make them sex workers. Because most of these women send their kids to hostels, send them to schools. But where are they going to keep them, right? So they are very worried, I think, the union government about this. And let us see how this will pan out. Because next, when we have a discussion, we will have to figure this out. See, we've been arguing for a long time that the Immoral Traffic Prevention Act should either be totally, cut down, or we must look at full decriminalization. But I don't think the government is willing to read down or do away with the Immoral Traffic Prevention Act. And they are worried. They are worried about what is going to happen with sex workers, because I think the pressure is also from the anti-trafficking groups who believe that all sex work is, you know, trafficking, or that all sex work is sexual exploitation, or all women in sex work are there because, you know, it is impossible for them to consent to be in sex work. So the consent of the worker, all of this is contested ground. And let us see what happens in July. Because when the panel met sex workers, I think they were not a panel who were, either pro or anti-sex work. They just met sex workers from all over India and they formed their recommendations from all the submissions that were made. And, so they who have actually met sex workers on the ground were convinced that decriminalization is the only way to give dignity to this work and to accept the fact that the workers have been there for generations and the violations against them is also very high because of the criminalization of sex work. So they have argued for decriminalization, but I think the union government and the state governments are unwilling to accept that.
Right. In terms of children found with sex workers, I thought that the Supreme Court, like one of the directors mentioned that, right? That if a child is found, it should not be assumed that they have been trafficked and that the police can check if they're related or not. And if they are the children of the sex workers, they should be like left with the sex workers.
See, we have a live case actually in Andhra Pradesh, which a member of the National Network of Sex Workers is dealing with, where the natural assumption is that, you know, the children are there because their mothers are wanting to put them into sex work. That is the natural assumption. And then it's very difficult because sometimes what happens is because of HIV, because of, COVID, some of the women have lost their lives and they've left their kids with whoever they trusted in the community. And so in this particular case, which we are fighting in Andhra Pradesh, the establishment of this direct link with the mother has been very tough because there are either aunts or grandmothers. This needs a serious engagement with the police because the anti-trafficking groups who have got all these children from the Andhra Pradesh case into their own protective homes are continuing to argue that these are not the natural mothers of these children. But the truth is that the natural mothers left them with these women. And they have been bringing them up for years. But, these kind of cases don't get addressed in this directive. And that's why I didn't actually... Because on the ground, the world is very different. And many times also, because sex workers are so highly mobile, many times they leave their kids for long periods of times with people they trust and, come back. If at that particular time the raid happens, it's very difficult to establish who the mother is. The culture also within these communities is that most of the women who are taking care of such children are called mother by the kids. How do you establish motherhood is a hugely contested space in these cultures. And I don't know how this is going to pan out. And one will have to wait and see.
Okay. Anything else you would like to add that we haven't discussed?
I think what I'd like to add is that on the ground, we are battling, stigma, discrimination from the health system, from the courts. We had a case where one of the judges actually said that because one of the adult women said that she wanted to go back to sex work after being released from protective home. The judge actually said, you people, this is off the record, but you've come from the gutter, you should go back into the gutter. She wants to go back into the gutter. And that is very sad, So we are not only just battling all the various things that the court is talking about, we are battling extreme stigma, extreme discrimination, which is not allowing access to justice for the sex workers. Are we not women? Are we not citizens? Are we not human? Is an old refrain. And it still continues in various spaces. So I think that unless we can change the mindset of society, this is going to be very difficult. This is a very good step that the Supreme Court has taken. And we hope that this is the beginning of the fight back for dignity for sex workers.
Okay, those are all of my questions. Thank you so much for your time.
You're most welcome.
Please rate our podcast and leave a comment if you like it. Underreported and underrepresented stories can become mainstream only if it reaches more people. So please support us by visiting a contributing page on our website, sunoindia.in, or follow us on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram.